What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast done with international breaks for 2025. Coming up, the race for Kim Hellberg, the weekend of derbies, and a season with Stevenage. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And I hope you're ready for the resumption of the Championship and a full round of fixtures in League One and League Two. Listener, I know that we are. It's me, Matt. I'm joined as ever by my two podcasting pals. How are you doing, Adrian Clark?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, I'm pumped, ready to go.
Sam Parkin's always busy. If he's not by a football pitch, he's on the golf course. Are you looking forward to getting back stuck in properly to a full round of fixtures this weekend, Sam?
I am, mate. I had Leatherhead against Hampton and Richmond penciled in for last weekend in the FA Trophy, but we didn't make it. I can't remember what we did instead, but they went out to Beavers 2-0 to Leatherhead, so they weren't in the draw, which I did yesterday on the radio, which was good fun. I heard Jeff Stelling not talking about me, but talking about the fact that his Hartlepool side had had drawn a team with nomads in the title. I can't remember the...
Connors Key Nomads, is it?
Say it again.
Connors Key Nomads?
It's not, no. I think it's actually in Leicestershire, so near you two chaps. So you should have just reeled that off there. But we
Anstey Nomads?
There you go, Clarkie. I knew you were good for something. Yeah. Jeff Stelling was talking about it on the breakfast show with Ben Foster this morning. There you go.
Fascinating. We are more concerned with the Football League, though, and we'll get onto that shortly. But first, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, it's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. All right, we'll get into the section that we refer to as news, but is mainly managerial chat next. Now then, everybody wants Kim Hellberg. Currently at Swedish Allsvenskan out Hammarby. Their season's just finished. Hammarby were runners-up behind Mjällby, or Johan Mjällby, as I'll be calling them. It looks like Middlesbrough are going to win that race at the time of recording, but it is fluid, listener. This chap is 37 years of age. Feels to me, therefore, Sam, that Sweden is the new Germany for getting your new young manager from. Nice to see a bit of change. This guy's never been anywhere near Borussia Dortmund's second team, as far as I can tell.
Sorry, mate, you're going to have to tell me where he's going again. I'm lost already. He's going to Middlesbrough.
Right, it looks like he's going... Basically, what we're doing is we're recording here at 11:25 in the morning on the day where we think all of this is going to be announced. So Swansea wanted him. Ooh. It looks like he's going to Middlesbrough. Steve Gibson's never poached a manager, has he? And this is at the end of the Allsvenskan season. So he's going to maintain that record if this continues.
I'm glad you've done it again there, because I was only joshing, but I think it's important for the listeners to have it clarified, because I was a little bit lost this time yesterday. I mean, it's really unfortunate for Middlesbrough. You know, I have sympathy for them in this situation in terms of the scenario that's been presented to them. But you would say absolutely that Middlesbrough is a better job right now, currently, as we sit, than the Swansea one. So if he is indeed going to be the man there, then yeah, it's a great job for someone to go in. I saw that AD Vybash has brought in Andy Myers, or Middlesbrough brought in Andy Myers in the last 24 hours, who of course worked with AD Vybash very successfully in Chelsea's academy side. So he's going to be in there in the short term. Where it leaves AD Vybash, we'll have to wait and see. He's obviously come out of the last couple of weeks with loads of credit, so much trauma off the pitch, and the steady hand that was required he provided for that that victory last time out. So we'll see if he's going to be part of the backroom staff moving forward. But what a brilliant job to come in. And yeah, I mean, I had a little read on his track record and, you know, what we're expected to see from his teams: high pressing, the possession style football, all the buzz phrases that you get probably with a manager who's coming into, not to modernise, because I think Middlesbrough were playing pretty good stuff in any case, but you know, coming in with a big reputation from abroad, it sounds like he ticks a lot of boxes. So really excited to see how he how he goes.
We'll give them a pass, Clarkie, because of the circumstances of how their managerial change has come about. But for Swansea, for Southampton, for Norwich, what on earth have they been playing at? They've had 2 weeks to sort this out, longer in some cases, but surely you're handicapping whoever the new guy is by not giving them this potentially vital period on the training ground.
Yeah, it just feels all a little bit hapless, doesn't it? Just doesn't feel like good management. It certainly doesn't feel like strong management. You would have thought that these clubs would have had a plan in mind when they made their changes, but it appears that's quite unlikely. I mean, Kim Hellberg, I don't know whether he was really on Borough's radar. Maybe they were. Obviously, it was well publicised that he was being interviewed by Swansea, that he'd been interviewed alongside Alan Sheehan, actually, and just missed out last time at Swansea. So, but, you know, he was nowhere to be seen on the odds, was he, for Borough? So they've swooped in. Swansea, who knows what they're going to do now? I mean, there's a couple of... Russell Martin's been linked. I think there's a manager from Portugal's second division that's strongly being linked as well. You just think, can they not do better than that? Swansea? Yeah, can they not get someone a little bit more recognised? I don't know. For Southampton, I think they've fallen into the trap of appointing the caretaker, Tonda Ecker, 32. I think that would probably be a mistake. It's a big club. It's high expectations. It's a heck of a big ask for someone of his sort of lack of experience. And that would be a mistake. And then you're looking at Norwich and, you know, Gary O'Neill, you've got some really big names linked with that job. Names that I think could do a really good job. And it appears they're going to go for Philippe Clement, formerly of Rangers, who Rangers fans really couldn't stand his football. I mean, they were constantly complaining, I remember it. Sideways, boring football, loads of long balls, very direct.
And
really,
I've got as many Scottish major honours as Philippe Clement, I've just noticed as well. One League Cup each.
It's not bad going, yeah. I don't know. It feels like Norwich and Swansea are having a mare and that Southampton are about to. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah, looks like Philippe Clement coming in then. Certainly all reports saying that as we record. Amazed, and he was Belgian, not French, personally. He has also won a couple of Belgian league titles as well as that Scottish League Cup in 2024. What I like, though, Sam, is we've had an answer to the question of whether, you know, will still be linked with other championship jobs? And the answer is will, because Will Still has been linked with Swansea and Norwich. And if Swansea are still looking for a manager, maybe Will Still will fit the bill. But yeah, Philippe Clement, pretty. I know you're big on your memes. Have you got one for me? Because that's how I'm feeling about Philippe Clement to Norwich.
Oh, I don't know. He's managed some big clubs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's not all bad. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's. I think for Will Still to go back in at Norwich would be an incredible gamble at this stage. And I think I've really fought his corner because, you know, listen, I'm not really well versed in his football and I don't think any of us are experts after 2 months or whatever he's had at Southampton. But because of his reputation, I think if he bides his time, he'll get another plum job. Whether it will be in this country as big as Southampton, we'll have to wait and see. But I think Norwich, with all the issues off the pitch and of course, an unbalanced squad with a lot of, I don't want to say duds, but a lot of players that haven't hit the ground running from overseas, I think that's a big gamble for him. Philippe Clement obviously will come in with a bit of pedigree, with a bit of clout, a bit of personality, you would imagine. And obviously, he's not managed at that level before, has he? So it's a bit of a fresh pair of eyes, maybe a fresh style. So we'll see. That one makes a little bit more sense. I know it's out of left field again, but it makes a little bit more sense than Will Still jumping straight back in at a club essentially that probably has as many, if not more, issues to solve than Southampton. Swansea as well. I mean, Swansea and Norwich, it beggars belief, really, they didn't have anyone lined up. You know, Norwich, as much as I wanted Liam Manning to succeed and wanted to be patient, how did they not foresee this happening 6 weeks ago? And also with Swansea, I think, giving Alan Sheehan the job, who may turn out to be a really good coach, manager in time, but they've been a bit counter-attacking and we know the way that Swansea are wanting to play. So therefore, you earmark someone who can bring that, you know, immediately. So to not have someone, a shortlist of guys that are available to come in and try and play passing football is a little bit chaotic, to say the least.
Very quickly, Swansea would have, I would imagine, you know, cut their right arm off to get Will Steele in the summer. You know, he's one of the most coveted young managers in the game, and it was, it felt like Southampton had a right result getting Will Steele on board. So there's a dodgy couple of months there where they didn't really get going right mean he's a write-off. I wouldn't have thought so. I thought he would be a leading candidate if I was in charge of one of these clubs, that's for sure.
Felt like a better fit to Swansea than Norwich to me.
Do some more rhyming.
Well, I tell you what, speaking of Welsh clubs looking for a new manager, Newport come into that category. David Hughes sacked after 6 months in charge, or as the Cumberland News and Star have put it, Newport County sack ex-Carlisle United player David Hughes. And what I liked about this one was that he announced it himself on BBC Radio Wales after the defeat at Shrewsbury, before the club did. I've spoken to the players and wished them all the best. Let's hope the next manager coming in can give them a bounce. A club statement later added, "We thank both Dave and Wayne for their hard work and commitment during their time and wish them the very best in the future." It's becoming a common theme on the pod, actually, Clarkie, isn't it? We've spoken about it a few times, that making the move from academy football to EFL football, not everybody can be Kieran McKenna.
No, it's really true. And we've seen it with a lot of good coaches that are in safe jobs that have made a great progression, and then they just can't resist the urge to become a first team manager. And I don't blame them for wanting to test themselves in that environment. But I speak to a lot of coaches for some of the other work that I do, and I just feel that you can be world class in your specialist area, and that might not be first team. It might be as an under 16 coach. You could be the best around, and you know I know that financially you might not, you know, make as much money, but I think there's a lot of satisfaction and pride in that. You know, don't blame people for trying it, but the success stories are few and far between. So yeah, let's see. Being linked, aren't they? One person that's being linked has that kind of background. That's Cameron Toshack, son of legendary John. Worked at Swansea with Hugh Jenkins, who's obviously the chairman down at Newport for the 21s, I think. So he's a candidate. Gary Monk's a candidate, but the favourite is Mark Sampson, which is sort of a little bit out of left field. Do you remember the former England women's team manager?
Yeah, sacked after evidence of inappropriate and unacceptable behaviour. Not the first person I'd be turning to.
No, but he's. I looked on his LinkedIn page because I couldn't find what he was doing. And he is the lead of football operations for an app called Coach Better. And this app is used by a lot of professional clubs, I think. It's a coaching app, so a coach educating app. So he really has been out of the game. So it must be a personal link there, I guess, with Mark Sampson.
Yeah, just quickly, I think last year when it was Nelson Jardine came in, didn't he? And I think we were anticipating, I certainly was, them trying to play very different style to, say, Mike Flynn's Newport. But that wasn't really evident to me last year. And I know they finished, you know, away from trouble, but they had Kyle Hudland, if you remember, a 6'9" centre forward. They mixed their game up inevitably as they would do with that target. So they've not become that possession heavy side that I anticipated. And I would expect that was the blueprint again this summer. And that's not been evident to me again. So I don't know where they turn here. And I just think, like a couple of other examples at the level, you know, with the squad they're operating with, a lot of lads that haven't quite made it at Swansea, Cardiff, taking other players from other Welsh clubs and from non-league. I don't think he's been handed the tools necessarily to have a real go at it. So I have a little bit of sympathy, and I think it's a really challenging job for someone to come in now, whether they turn to someone of similar ilk or they go for someone to just consolidate them in a division. We'll have to wait and see. I'd probably say the latter now. I think they've tried to roll the dice and modernise probably the football the last two appointments, and it's not worked particularly well. So they need to make sure they stay in the division.
Get whoever wrote that bonkers match report from the Walsall game to have a go, maybe just see how that works. They were sort of at it again, but not to the same extent after Shrewsbury, where County were plunged further into darkness, deep in the League Two basement, as former Portsmouth Predator Anthony Scully's second half strike sank them at the murky Crowd Meadow. Tony Rees, the penman there. Right, that's enough managerial stuff. Let's talk some Championship football next. Well, you can expect plenty of discord at Deepdale on Friday night. Shall we call this one a Lancashire hot pot? Will it make me an old hack if I do that again? Can I change that at this stage of my career? Lancashire hot pot to kick off the weekend. It is then Preston versus Blackburn Rovers. Crikey, Clarkey, Preston are fourth in the table. Who saw that coming and what's it down to?
No, didn't see it coming, but Paul Heckingbottom is a manager that's taken a team, you know, up, isn't he? He's got a very good track record, and as have a lot of the guys, by the way, at the top end of the Championship right now. Now he's done a great job, and what he's doing, he's doing something that a lot of Preston managers have failed to do in recent times, and that's he's creating a bit of excitement about the team. They've just been sort of meandering in mid-table in the Championship for so long, not playing a particularly great brand of football. And yeah, there's still a counter-attack inside. They don't have that many shots. I think they've had the third fewest, but they are scoring goals this season. I think they've scored in 12 of their 15 games. The nice spread of players getting involved with goals and assists. And yeah, they've settled on a nice back, well, it's back three. They've often been back three, haven't they? But two up front, which I like to see. Obviously, one of them's not going to be Milutin or Smajic moving forwards, but you know, they've got other strikers. So yeah, they're playing a pretty good brand of football. Not super exciting, but they, like I say, they're attacking, and I think they'll attack Blackburn. I think in the past you might have said, ah, this has got a horrible game written all over it, but I actually think Preston will get after Blackburn and get on the front foot early doors and try and hurt them. They're playing with that much confidence. I noticed 30% of Preston's goals this season have come in the first 15 minutes of games, which is incredible, really. But that tells you, you know, how pumped up they are, what good energy there must be in the team. So yeah, I think Preston will fancy their chances. Just a quick word on Thierry Small. Some brilliant crossing this season. He's been, I think, the second best crosser in the Championship. So he's been really good signing from Charlton.
He scored a hell of a goal the other day as well. It was kind of 25 yards on the angle, left foot, but it wasn't ferociously struck. It was almost guided to the top corner. It was really a beauty. Well.
Yeah, 13 new signings for them this season. 11 points better off than at this time last term. And as Clarkey says, no Osmaich, 9-match ban for him, found guilty of racially abusing Burnley's Hannibal Mejbri in February. Blackburn, Sam, 19th, 6 points above the relegation zone. Couple of key absentees as well. Scott Wharton out for 10 weeks with a torn Achilles, ouch, and Ballas Toth out for 3 months with a knee injury. Word round the campfire, they're looking to make up to 3 signings in January. I mean, that's the minimum they're going to need, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I anticipated Blackburn season only going one way, in truth. So I think their form, especially away from home, has taken me by surprise. They've won 4 of 7. So that's, throw that into the mix, could make it a difficult day for Preston. And of course, it's a derby, so they will inevitably travel in their numbers and the players should raise their game. And they're in a pretty good place at the moment. He's gone 3-5-2, Valerian Ismail. That was the shape, obviously, that we grew accustomed to when he was initially at Barnsley. He's got Morishita playing in behind a front two of Okahashi and Goodjohnson, who started scoring as well. I think he was 2 in 3 or 3 in 2.
Two teams playing a front two against each other in the same match. I mean, that doesn't happen very often these days.
It does now, doesn't it? And I don't know if the ball's going to be just lobbed into the box, but it's mad the way football turns, isn't it? And I think it does funnel down the levels. Yeah, but I think Blackburn are similar in terms of squad depth and squad quality to probably how they were last year. Ali Bousu, who's coming on the right hand side, obviously had Callum Britton there previously, and I think he's deputised pretty well for Britton, who's moved on. But yeah, they're doing better than maybe I anticipated. But yeah, having lost a few big names like Higham and Travis, and now a couple to injury, they'll have to add in January to safeguard their position and it not be a season where they're struggling. I think the bigger picture is, of course, still about the ownership and the wrangles there, but they'll be competitive in this game. And I think it's low scoring. I think it's two teams who are better defensively still than they are attacking. I think it's a 1-0 victory for Preston, or possibly a 1-1.
Listener, you knew this already, but just to inform Sam and Adrian that Philippe Clement has now been confirmed as the Norwich manager on a 3.5-year deal. His first game's at Birmingham on Saturday.
The Scottish League Cup winners.
Our next game is another derby. This one's on Saturday too. This one, bridge-based. Bristol City and Swansea City vie for the rights to the Severn Bridge, I think.
It's not a derby. Come on. This can't be a derby.
It's a rivalry at the very least.
Swansea's miles into Wales. Bristol, Cardiff, maybe.
If you're going down that route, Swansea's nowhere near Cardiff, really.
We could be here a long time doing this, and we simply do not have that kind of time available to us. Bristol City, Sam, 2 points off the playoffs. Jason Knight and Cameron Pring could be back for this one, and their returns would be timely, right? Because they haven't won in their last three games. A classic EFL side where you take your eye off them for a moment and their form has totally turned around from what it was last time you looked.
Yeah, I think the new manager was getting a lot of credit, wasn't he, a few weeks ago? But I think in that draw at Watford, there was certain shoots of recovery and more players for him readily available to select. They've had a horrible time of injuries. Zach Viner's had to play in midfield for quite a number of weeks now. I think Hayden Roberts played left-sided centre-half. He's ordinarily a wing-back in their kind of back three system. So, yeah, they got players back now. Yeah, I think in attack they got options as well. Armstrong, Miulu, Emil Rees all featured in that draw at Vicarage Road. The problem being they've lost at home to Oxford, QPR and Blackburn, I think, and Bristol City, probably in keeping with my thoughts about them the last few seasons, always liable to win on the road. I think they're a good counter-attacking team. I think they have been, but I think they've got that in them at Ashton Gate to lose against the lesser light. So they need to correct that here against a Swansea team who could possibly arrive slightly in disarray. But the goalkeeper's in good form. He played well at Watford. He's recovered from that that mess of a concession at Stoke, if memory serves me right. So he's in a good place at the moment, but yeah, maybe just misfiring a little bit in attack. Rees 1-9 now. So yeah, Mometi, Scott Twine, they're still the two that Bristol City look towards for that creativity and that goal threat.
Nice game for Bristol City, but I guess a shot to nothing for Swansea. Clarkie, nobody's going to expect much from them in this game, are they?
No, it's not going well. I mean, they've had a long time to stew on that 4-1 battering from Ipswich, haven't they? They're not defending particularly well at the moment. They've only got 3 clean sheets. Yeah, this is a tough game, I think, for Swansea. Got to start better. One thing I've noticed about Swansea is how poor they are early on in games. They've not let at half time once this season. Haven't led once. And I looked around the championship. Every other team has led at least 3 times at the break. So they've been awful in the first half. And a lot of their points have been earned by, you know, coming on a little bit stronger in matches. And, you know, if they fall behind to Bristol City away from home, I think that they could be in a bit of trouble. So, yeah, they need to find more creativity. They need to find more goals. And yeah, it's that period of limbo, isn't it? So, yeah, I think Swansea will be hard-pushed to win this game.
I spoke to a journalist from Welsh Medium yesterday, and I said, looking at the table with the expectation level at Swansea that I thought they had going into the season, I don't think this start has been an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. And he said that this is their worst ever start since relegation and just shot me down in one swoop. But yeah, I've got a friend locally who supports Swansea, and he was telling me that Sheehan was under massive pressure about a month ago. So I think there's been a bit of an outlay in the summer maybe that I wasn't aware of, and that he's been backed, and that the squad that's been put together there, I think the supporters expected them to be top half and maybe even having a tilt this season, maybe slightly unrealistically, but them's are the facts.
If that's the big outlay, if that's the squad they've got with a big outlay, I think questions have got to be asked.
Yeah.
Well, the British Broadcasting Corporation reporting that Russell Martin would be open to a return. I bet he would. Vitor Matos is the Portuguese to whom you referred, I think, Clarkie. Maritimo head coach, did work under Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool for a little while too. Final championship preview for us. Regards the leaders, Coventry going into their lunchtime date with West Brom 5 points clear at the top, having won 8 of their last 9 games. Frank Lampard named manager of the month for October last week. Why don't they just give those out at the end of the actual month they're reflecting? That is a minor quibble of mine. They wouldn't have wanted the break then, Clarkie, would they, in that kind of form?
No, but it is what it is. I think the big positive actually is Jack Radoni's now fit. because they've had that break. He's been out, I think, since September time. And they've not missed him. They've won 8 of 9 games without arguably their best player. So really, really impressive. But he's now fit and available. And the thing is, he probably won't walk straight back into the team. That's how good they've been. Why would he, I suppose? Be really interested, I think, to see if Lampard sticks with the 4-4-2 that he used at Stoke. It isn't something he's been doing. He played Thomas Asante, joint leading scorer in the Championship. I don't think many of us had him down for that at this stage of the season. 10 goals. Hadji Wright, 8 goals. He started them together. Now, I looked at it and looked back at some of the games and the goals that Thomas Asante scored. And he scored from the left wing. He scored from the right wing. He scored down the middle. He scored as a number 10. You can actually put him anywhere. and he's dangerous at the moment. So that'll be interesting to see whether they go 4-4-2 or not. They're just flying, aren't they? I mean, they've scored at least twice in 11 of 15 games. West Brom, for context, have scored twice in 3 games this season. So that's a big difference. So yeah, look, Coventry, there's not a lot else to say other than everyone's in great form. They look a really balanced side and they're pretty exciting as well. You know, they can grind it out like they did at Stoke, but they can also play with a little bit of swashbuckle and swagger as well. So look, yeah, Lampard is in a great place at the moment. And of course, with January around the corner, he can probably beef up his bench, you know, during that month as well, which could be absolutely crucial, because that is the downer. That is the only negative I see with Kov. I haven't got many game changers on the bench.
Sam, yesterday in the car, we had the Spice Girls on. My son was moved to ask why there isn't a question mark in the track, "Who Do You Think You Are?" There would have been a question mark over Ryan Mason, wouldn't there? Had West Brom not beaten Oxford before the break, having gone 4 without a win before that. Not good on the road. Where are you at on Mason's nascent managerial career?
Definitely a question mark for me. I'm with Hayden. Need one in there inserted. But I think the sentiment is that there's a lot of goodwill towards him. I think that the fans have kind of taken to him, certainly in kind of what he's saying, maybe not the way that the team's been performing. I still think this is a pretty good defensive side, but certain limitations going forward, despite Isaac Price and Mikey Johnson having pretty good numbers for this stage of the season. I think Price has got 5 goals and 2 assists. And I think the reason I'm saying that is that they showed real resilience, actually, and they fought for the manager in that victory. They could have gone under quite easily, and Hegerberg came on and obviously gets a bit of a rare goal, despite his performances being good, which has been kind of in my sentiment across the season when I've seen him. He gives everything and he's a good focal point for the side, but he's not providing that final flourish. Him or Madja really have been lacking in that regard. So you're still looking for a little bit more in an attacking sense. Only 3 teams scored fewer, but I think they've got it in their armoury. We've seen it across the piece so far this season to go and make it difficult for Coventry. They'll be clear favourites, but I think they can keep the score down. I think they can keep it competitive, but you know, that's the area that he needs to improve if they're going to rise up the table. Tactically, they're really narrow, West Brom, and they've been playing with a centre-half as one of the full-backs at times, and I think Styles is still playing at left-back, and you really need to get a little bit of width from those two guys if your wingers are going to be inverted. It's obviously something that they're, you know, trying to implement and think that they can probably saturate the middle of the pitch and get joy that way, but they're not really getting that width. So maybe something tactically may change over this break or as the season evolves, but I think they go there with renewed confidence after that victory. But of course, Coventry will be clear favourites for this kind of local derby.
Yeah, Coventry
get the mileage up.
Well, Coventry struggle for local rivals, but West Brom don't. So I think I don't need the mileage for this because of that. I'm going to say, Coventry, you stick with Leicester, but at least it's not a very long away day for West Brom if you do lose. All right, we'll park the Championship chat there. We've got a special guest coming on to talk all things Stevenage next. Well, joining us now is John Hazelwood, author of Before You Go, a story of a father and son attending every Stevenage game last season. John, thanks for being with us. First off, do a better job than I just did of describing the book.
You actually did an excellent job of describing the book. The idea was that me and my then 14-year-old son, Oscar, would go and see every Stevenage competitive game, home and away, last season. It would be a multifaceted love story. Be the father and the son love love story. It would be the story of a mostly often unrequited love for Stevenage. And it would be a story of a love kindled in a young boy's heart for lower league football.
I was going to say, how much cultivation did you have to do of his love for Stevenage? Was it a genuine competition, or did you just kind of bludgeon him over the head with all things Stevenage?
Well, there was a kind of mixture of bullying and begging and cajoling, but also he'd been to see Tottenham occasionally and he got a little soft spot for them. But when we started going to Stevenage, which was sort of when he was sort of 10, 11, then he made a connection. He made a connection with the club. He made a connection with the players, and he made a connection with his fellow supporters. It was something that became a big part in his life.
I'm loving the book, John. I got to say, it's obviously close to my heart, Stevenage.
Yeah.
Brought back some great memories. I haven't read it all yet. I'm only sort of 60 odd pages in, but I'm really enjoying it. So congratulations on it. Yeah, I'm enjoying lots about it. The abuse that you two get, in particular young Oscar at the age of 14, quite remarkable. I mean, let's name and shame. I mean, who have been the most abusive away fans that you've experienced?
Well, he because he's 14, obviously it's not large-scale organized football hooliganism. What it tends to be is sort of boys his own age or slightly over sidling up to him and whispering some kind of obscenity at him, and naturally he loves it. He believes that this is what football is all about. I mean, and throughout the book, there's a constant battle between me and him about his swearing. Yeah, he's a 14, 15-year-old boy. You don't want your 14, 15-year-old boys swearing. It breaks my heart. But now he's in the full-scale swearing section, and he loves that. He drops the swear words in really kind of casually, and you can see him raise his little eyebrow and look up, oh, did I get away with saying that particular swear word? And of course, the answer is yes, but he sees it as a rite of passage.
John Clark, he tells me that there's a pie chart ranking all the pastry delights up and down the country. I hope you didn't have the misfortune of having a pucker pie at my mob QPR last season. What's the number one then?
But the best pie that we had was actually at Wrexham, the best night of our season, without question. It was a beautiful pie, not big, but it was properly crafted. And at the crust, it had a little Wrexham shield on it, and it was delicious. And he was so, so impressed. Another pie which he really enjoyed was at Bristol Rovers, because we got to Bristol Rovers, and for once, for the first and last time, there were no prices on their food cabin. We ordered our stuff, said, how much is it? And she said, to you, it's absolutely nothing. Because a Stevenage director, whose name was never ever given, had put loads of money behind the Bristol Rovers food shack so we could all get a drink. And absolute credit to them. They'd never mentioned this on social media.
That's brilliant. I love it.
Good job you only had a dozen each, eh?
And you love the manager, don't you? I mean, he wasn't sold, was he, Oscar, initially? But Alex Revel, or Revs, as you call him, is doing all right, isn't he?
He is. I mean, last season was obviously his first full season in his second stint as a manager. And the first time, it hadn't worked out too well. It was just as we started going, and he was young. He had those COVID issues around his first tenure, and he did this interview before where he admitted, I just wasn't up to it. But when Steve Evans defected to Rotherham, then there was, I think, a sense that he'd done what he could do. And when you appoint from within, as you guys know, there's not necessarily a great level of excitement amongst the supporter base. Revs took over. He was, I think, to an extent, a changed man. A lot had happened to him since he'd been sacked before. So last season was very much a period of transition, and a season of transition. And a lot of people have asked, you know, do you wish you were doing the book this season? Now things are going better. And the answer to that is, I'm delighted things are going better. But lower league football, following a lower league team, isn't about winning all the time, because you don't.
Well, it looks like a fairly winnable game this weekend against Doncaster, he said, touching wood. John, really appreciate your time today. Just wanted to finish by asking you wrote a book about Joy Division and New Order as well. So given your time following Stevenage last season, which of these songs would most aptly describe the time that you spent? She's Lost Control, Atmosphere, Love Will Tear Us Apart, Isolation, True Faith, or Blue Monday?
Oh, Love Will Tear Us Apart. Of course it's Love Will Tear Us Apart. It didn't nearly tear us apart, but there were moments.
A few Blue Mondays and a bit of Isolation as well, I'm sure. Tell everybody how they can get the book then.
They can get the book. They can get the book from all good bookstores, hopefully a few bad ones as well. They can order it from Waterstones, from Amazon. Hopefully it's in the Stevenage Club shop, which means that passing punters, those Doncaster fans who come to the Lamex, although it's not going to be called the Lamex anymore, who come to the new unnamed ground on Saturday, can maybe pick up a copy if they want to experience the joys of League One football, which is so familiar to the supporters of Doncaster.
Excellent stuff. Really appreciate your time today, John. Good luck with the book and for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me on. It's been a joy.
Thank you to John Hazelwood there. Do go check out that book. You don't have to be a Stevenage supporter to enjoy it. Elsewhere in League One, it's the Battle of the Bees. Yorkshire versus Lancashire. JJ Okocha versus Benito Carboni. Trotters v Bantams, etc., etc. Bolton Wanderers v Bradford City to the football layman. Fourth v third as well this, Clarkie. And Bolton unbelievably good at home, winning their last 8 games in a row. They'll be heavy favourites for this one.
Yeah, look, yeah, I went early and saying Bolton would be top two, and they've had one or two wobbles on the road, but at home they are pretty imperious, aren't they? I think the goal difference is 18-4. Beat Port Vale, didn't they? I think 4-0 at home before the break. So yeah, they're an excellent team. They really are. And he's moved away from that back three that they sort of became well known for under Ian Everts. You know, he's got two wingers now and number 10. And look, one of the wingers has been brilliant, Mario Kosiadjubre. Probably haven't given him enough love on this pod.
Well, I saw a piece this week on the BBC saying they might change his loan destination in January.
Yes.
So that could be a sticking point, right?
Yes, well, he's got 6 goals and 6 assists, a couple of world-class goals in there as well. And I remember him as a youngster at Arsenal, and he's exciting. You know, he would take players on. He's quite small, but he's nimble, confident, left-footer, coming in off the right. Excellent prospect. But yeah, he's done so well that I think Sheffield United, West Brom, Preston, Bristol City, all these clubs have expressed an interest. And yeah, be interested to see what he would want to do. Of course you want to play in the Championship, but
you don't want a Nathan Lowitt, do you?
Yeah. At the moment he's on course to maybe be League One Player of the Year, and you know, Scoop, it was certainly getting the team of the year. You know, all these little accolades, they can mean quite a lot, I think, to young players making their way. I wouldn't move if I was him. I would say, no, I'm loving it here. Bolton's not a small club. I mean, what do you think, Sam?
I think stay there, and then in an ideal scenario, you get promoted with them. And then if he's not deemed ready for being part of a Premier League squad, he does another loan in the Championship next season at Bolton. Mm. Or, you know, you go to someone who may be jostling for promotion in the second tier next year round. I don't like it, really. I just think, yeah, maybe sometimes they always will hold the power, won't they, the clubs. But I think, you know, for his development and for his, enjoyment, you know, stick where you've been having success. And, and you know, these are the things at the end of your career, like Nathan Lowe, he would have looked back so fondly on that year at Walsall had he have won the league and been the top scorer and the best player in the division. And that was unfortunately taken away from him because, you know, he was a Stoke player.
Yeah, and yeah, Jason Ayto, who used to be work at Arsenal, was Edu's number two. He's now sort of, I think, in charge of, he's like the director of football at Brighton. So he's got to have a chat with him, so they'll know each other. And hopefully he'll give him a choice and say, look, you could go here, here or here, but if you want to stay at Bolton, we're fine with that. I really hope they don't put pressure on him because that would be unfair. But yeah, him and Mason Burstow, who's also on loan from Hull, have been brilliant, haven't they? So you wonder whether Hull might recall Mason Burstow, I guess, as well. But yeah, in the here and now, Bolton are playing well. And they'll fancy taking on Bradford at the weekend.
Interesting, isn't it, Sam? Bradford lost last 3 all comps, no wins in the league since the end of September. But they're not alone in this. After bright starts, all 3 of the promoted clubs are struggling. Is that just a natural regression to the mean as you make the step up?
Yeah, quite possibly. I was thinking that, yeah, it was Doncaster, wasn't it, the other one, and along with Wimbledon. Yeah, I think they've been really unfortunate with injury, though. Bradford as well, some of those leading lights from the second half of last season, the ones who supplemented the loss of Cook have been absent. Will Swan's come in and he had a brilliant start to the season. I think he scored 6 and 8, Will Swan. He's been missing for a few. Sasevic has continued where he left off in the fourth tier scoring goals. He's not played in the last five, and they've had defensive woes as well. But Graham Alexander did give them a little bit actually after the Football League Trophy defeat, and just said that there's been a little bit of a drop off across the last five or six games. They obviously went to Newcastle in the League Cup, and subsequently I think they won narrowly against Blackpool if memory serves, and then the performance level's not been particularly good. So, you know, this is a tough game for them. And if you factor in as well that so much of their turnaround, I think, under Graham Alexander has been about that home form. They actually suffered defeat in there against Burton recently, and away from home they've been great. I think they've only lost once on their travel, so I wouldn't go as far to say that it's flipped, but you know, away from home they've been quite a challenge for everyone that they face. But I think it's been selection woes for him really, and when he can get his best players back together, I'm sure Bradford will be fine. But we may have to, you know, reconsider maybe my suggestion probably from earlier in the season that they could go back to back. Probably just reality has sunk in that the step up means that there's going to be some challenges, and Saturday will certainly be another one.
Mm. Long way to go in the season yet. The League Two game that we've got our eye on is a slightly awkward reunion for Ian Holloway, perhaps. His current club, Swindon, host his former Chargers, Grimsby, a club he left in somewhat acrimonious circumstances in 2020. In 2025, his Robins lead the way in League Two. The Mariners are on the fringes of the playoff places. Swindon a point ahead of Walsall after drawing at Fleetwood last weekend. Sam, this is a rare fisherman-related doubleheader for them, from Cod Army to Mariners in 7 days.
Yeah, and probably the two destinations, to carry on the food theme from earlier in the pod, where you do get the best fish and chips, I would say, Grimsby and Fleetwood. Would there be two better?
Oh, they should be, though, shouldn't they? Proximity to the ocean should equal better.
I mean, obviously, Blackpool, same ballpark but as Fleetwood. But I do remember my final season getting off. I think I actually travelled back independently, maybe with a teammate on the train, but we definitely got the fish and chips from the coach before we departed Fleetwood. So there you go. Yeah,
do they still get fish and chips after a game? Or do you think the sports scientists have got stuck into it?
It's the smell as well, though, isn't it? I mean, it just stinks the coach out for weeks.
I think a blind eye is turned when you're replenishing after a game. Anything goes, really. I quite like looking on Instagram, or it comes up on my feed, of what the England rugby players or the equivalent from other teams eat post-match, and it's unbelievable, the spread. Like, it's tremendous. Just getting piled into burgers and nachos and all sorts. Anyway, I digress. Swindon, I think that was a good point, Matt, to be honest. And the reason being is that it's absolutely a game that Swindon would have lost probably a year ago. And they were missing Finlay Munro, who's been a revelation, left-sided player on loan from Villa. He got that wonderful last-minute winner the other week. His first career goal, I believe. And the main man, Drynan Drinnan. I've never actually sought advice on how you actually say that one. I probably should, considering he's wearing my centre-forward jersey at Swindon. But he was missing as well. So I think on another day they could have won that one. But Pete Wild's side played really well. Ollie Palmer on from the off in his absence. It was Tafazoli that caught the equaliser. Swindon, yes, of course, they would have missed the centre-forward, but they've had the most goal scorers, I believe, the most spread, 15 goal scorers in the whole Football League at this current stage of the season. So they've got loads of goal threats. They're a bit patched up defensively with Ollie Clark having to play as part of the back three. But there's a good variety in Swindon's play. They can play long, obviously, into Palmer. They can knock it about. They've got good experience with a few younger legs in there as well. And at home, they've been very, very good. Just a one defeat against Barnet. So this is a meeting of two very attack-minded teams. Loads of goals. Should be a really good one for the neutral. And just before Clarkie tells us about Grimsby, you know, I kind of went all in on them after a month or so of the season, saying they are top seven certainties. So interesting, they've had a little bit of a drop-off and, you know, maybe just took their eye off the ball, having had those headlines and those big cup ties earlier in the season.
Yeah, down in 10th coming into this one, Adrian, but only a point off the playoffs. And a caveat, I guess, for the defeat against Chesterfield on Saturday, they were down to 10 men when the goal went in. But one win in five league games, there are fewer excuses for that, I suppose.
Yeah, they've slid down the league, haven't they? I think three defeats in five. It's a good time to play Grimsby. But I'm with Sam, actually, and Sam's initial opinion. I still think Grimsby are one of the best teams in the league. They're rounded. They're a good possession team. They're average 58% or something like that. Very high. They're a good pressing team. They're awkward to play against. They're very attacking. I think they're the joint second top scorers. Got forwards that are causing teams massive problems. Jazz Cabbier up front, highest XG in the division. Charles Vernon, who's often been used down the left, he's had the most shots. He's created 34 chances. It's a brilliant crosser. He's having a great campaign. I just think that they've got a lot there. The one thing that's mucked it up for them lately is individual mistake. They've made loads of errors, you know, trying to overplay a bit at the back. And it's cost them big time. Christy Pym has committed three errors that have led to goals. That's the goalie of late. And of course, he was sent off against Chesterfield, so he will miss this game. And I do wonder whether that might be a blessing, because he wasn't in very, very good form. Yeah, I've bigged them up because they've got loads going for them, Grimsby. But errors that have led to shots, 18. It's the most in League Two. Errors that have led to goals, 7. The most in League Two. So cut those individual mistakes out, Grimsby will probably be top of the league.
All right, well, that looks like an intriguing game in prospect there. We're not going to predict that, but we are going to do our predictions as we wrap things up here. What a weekend it was for S Park in last time around. 7 points is almost unprecedented. Really good stuff, Sam. Unbeaten, 2 perfect scores and a point. I got 3. Just the 1 for Adrian Clark. Oh dear, what's that done to the leaderboard then, Clark?
I'm delighted about it. You know, it was getting boring. Let's be honest.
Where were we on giving people additional points for getting multiple correct scores?
No, we don't do that. We like the clean, old-fashioned system. Suddenly, we've got a race, okay? I'm on 31, Sam's on 25, Matt's on 21. I'm buzzing about it. I'm really chuffy. Yeah, because it was just too easy.
I don't know if you've seen the new series of Alan Partridge, but very familiar to when he tries to style out the fact that his girlfriend has left him there. No, I'm pleased. Yeah, please, I can do all the things that I always wanted to. We are first dibs this week then, Clark. In this, I'm glad I picked this one actually now. Birmingham against Norwich. Bit of a gear shift for the Canaries here. Does that change your prediction?
Yeah, the new manager bounce definitely is a thing. I just don't think they're that good, Norwich. So Birmingham at home are pretty consistent. I'm going to go Birmingham City 2, Norwich 1.
Sam? I'd already put a nil in there before you said that.
I'm going to have the 2-0. I think we're going to get loads of endeavour from Norwich, and they have been all right for like halves away from home, haven't they? But they're going to get the reality check. The manager's going to have the reality check. Oh, a lot of work to do.
All right, I've got ground to make up, so I'm going to say this will be a 1-1 draw. Wickham against Lincoln. You know what? I'm going to go first with this one as well, and I'm going to say this is going to be a 2-2 draw. What do you think, Adrian?
No, I think low scoring. Both teams, well, Wickham have been in good form. Lincoln are up there, but not been great away. Tight defences. Wickham 1, Lincoln 0.
Sam?
Oh, I think this will be a bruising encounter. And I'm more than happy to go with a 1-1.
Okay. Last up, Crawley against Accrington. Sam, you get first pick here.
Accrington won well, did they not? Yeah. And Crawley was 2-2, wasn't it, at Gillingham? Some good goals in that game, actually. Is it at Crawley?
It's at Crawley.
Accrington have been in good form, but their luck shall run out this weekend. 2-1, Crawley.
Clarkie?
Well, I had 2-1 down. Both teams turned the corner. I think we can say that about these two. Playing in much better nick. They're both scoring goals. So 2-1 would have been my pick. I'm now going to go bolder and say it's going to finish Crawley 3, Accrington 2.
See, these two actually spend time on thinking about their predictions. I'm just looking at mine, which are always done on the hoof, and thinking, oh, that'd be quite nicely symmetrical if I just picked 3 draws. So why not? 1-1 again in this one. We shall see how we get on with that. It really, really annoys Adrian that I do that and sometimes get it right.
You're belittling the competition by doing this, Matt. At least pretend that you care.
I do care, just not quite as much as
I think you're just giving yourself this get out of jail card, Matt.
Well,
it's like if I finish bottom, no one can say anything because they know I didn't try.
Well, speaking of not trying, we'll come to that with our tweet of the week next. But let me remind you once more before we go about the offer from our partners Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25 if your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting. Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Tweet of the week then. The aforementioned Accrington Stanley and their good win. Now, this is a half-hearted post, if ever I've read one, from Liam Coyle at @LiamCoyle_99, who simply says, good win today. Red circle emoji, white circle emoji, punching fist emoji at ASF official. Sam, why bother?
Yeah, I do like the array of photos, I've got to say. He's captured the fixture very well, even pre-match, and a nice shot of the ref as well in all his glory. And I enjoy Force Aki with, he'll break your legs, coil, 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 the third reply there. So I presume that's a chant, or maybe he's a hard tackling young man. So, yeah, but again, and this is old ground that I'm going to tread on here. It's clearly because he had a 8 out of 10 game, isn't it, in their fine victory?
It is. And it's also quite clearly, Clarky, because he wants to get some love in the replies. Interesting that he posted it at 9:25 in the evening. Do you think that it was worth it, given that he's got John calling him his man of the match with 3 exclamation marks and Calvin saying class today, mate? Is that enough to bother?
I would feel a little bit disappointed when I came back and checked, and just the two responses. It's a bit underwhelming, isn't it? He's probably thinking, yeah, what was the point of that? What I found interesting was I looked through some of his previous tweets, and there's a lovely banner made by Accrington Stans. Obviously, it's called Coil. It's in orange colours. Just stop Coil.
Clever.
So I think, you know, I think we all know what the, you know, not just stop oil, just stop coil. I think they obviously take it home and away. So he's a bit of a cult hero.
Former contemporary of Trent Alexander-Arnold as well, which is nice. Got to play against him last year, that would have been, wouldn't it?
But his shirt as well, yeah, we're all scrolling through his feed. You see, it's done the job, Liam. You certainly have more impressions on your
good
posts.
Good PR, isn't it? Maybe, do you think that players now are deliberately doing bad tweets so that they can get on this show and therefore increase their brand?
I think it's inevitable, yeah. I mean, he joined...
Why don't we try and get someone to move?
Yeah, that's the next thing. He's joined in 2013. He's only got just over 5,000 followers. Come on, I know there's more Stanley fans who listen to the pod who should... and could be following. But anyway, thank you, Liam. You've given us a bit of content to finish the show, if nothing else. But that is where we are going to leave things for today. Enjoy the weekend's football wherever you are going. My thanks, as ever, to Sam and to Adrian and to John Hazelwood for joining us earlier. Remember his book, Before You Go, A Story of a Father and Son Attending Every Stevenage Game Last Season, is available now. We shall catch up with you again next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.